This is The Takeaway. I'm Arun Venugopal. And now, close your eyes, unless you're driving. Relax and take a little trip with us to the top of a glacier.
When I climbed up onto the glacier, its physicality became overwhelming.
Writer Dan DeWayne recently stepped out onto the Lyell Glacier, once the largest in Yosemite National Park. Today, that glacier is disappearing.
I could hear a million tiny meltwater veins and arteries crisscrossing over and under the surface to create a fragile lattice of ice that crunched underfoot.
Dan climbed to Lyell with Greg Stock, the park geologist at Yosemite, who's been watching the glacier's demise firsthand.
I've been studying this glacier for 14 years, and it has been a growing realization, I guess, punctuated by a couple of moments that were very telling to me that the glacier was dying, effectively.
I asked Greg and Dan to talk to us about Lyell and what it might tell us about the future of our national parks and the warming climate that's changing them.
The Lyell itself came into the Western consciousness as a thrilling clue to the Earth's immense history and sort of mind-blowing sweeps of time. And it is melting out now and disappearing as really one of the canaries in the climatic coal mine.
Greg, when John Muir first encountered the Lyell Glacier, it was about 13 million square feet, which is around 300 acres in size. And that was in the 1800s. How big is it now?
It's about 20% of the size that it was when John Muir first set foot on it. So if it was about 300 acres then, the Lyell Glacier now is about 60 acres in size.
And when did you realize just how fast it was disappearing?
There are two moments that stand out. The first was in 2012, which was at the end of a four-year experiment in which we planted stakes in the glacier and looked for movement of those stakes as the glacier would be flowing downhill. And after 4 years of measurement on the Lyell Glacier, we came up with zeros, meaning that the stakes effectively had not moved at all. That means that the glacier had stagnated, and without movement, I think you could make a good case that the Lyell Glacier really doesn't fit the definition of a glacier anymore. It's a stagnant ice patch, so it's very much different than the true glacier that John Muir experienced in 1872. And then the other difference, I think, was in 2014, during the midst of a very intense drought in California with very little snow and warm temperatures, and the glaciers were retreating rapidly during that time period. And in that year, I confirmed that a patch in the middle of the glacier, which I had somewhat hopefully thought was maybe just rock debris on the surface of the glacier, was in fact bedrock that was poking up through it. So at that moment, I realized that we were probably looking at the loss of that part of the Lyell Glacier in a matter of years to maybe decades at the most, but that it could very likely happen in my lifetime.
And yet, for you, this is not just about the loss of something that's been hundreds of years in the making, but a much more profound change that you're witnessing.
Yeah, I think the key thing to know about the retreat of these glaciers is that although these glaciers have formed and retreated before over many thousands of years, what's happening now is different, right? The reasons for the retreat of these glaciers has more to do with human influences on the climate than the natural cycle of climate change.
For you, Dan, when you first stood atop the ice field, what sticks with you the most?
You know, really, it was the sound. From afar, an ice field or a glacier appears to be just this sort of big white patch. And I have been on healthy or relatively healthy, you know, really big, active glaciers in other parts of the world, and they have a kind of massive grandeur to them. I was really surprised by the sort of micro and macro complexity of the surface of it and of the sounds of melting water. The whole surface is, it almost looks as if like it had been hit by a giant ball-peen hammer a zillion times. It's pitted by these cups called sun cups that are about the size of like a small bathtub. And this whole thing is at an angle. I don't know if Greg could say what it is, but I'll just take a wild guess, 30, 40 degree mountain slope, something like that. So the whole surface of the thing is in the sun. The sun is melting the surface. that melt is pooling in these little cups and filling up in these sun cups and then spilling over the rims between them and trickling down. So it's like, you know, 1,000 tiny streams trickling and flowing. And then there are laying over that surface like a lace or something is this very fragile lattice of glass-like ice that also has its own kind of micro-melt streams and features within it that are sort of like flowing and trickling capillaries. And so sitting in the sun way up in that thin mountain air and listening to that rushing and trickling multiplied by 1,000 is very confusing emotionally in a way, because the sound of trickling water, particularly in an environment like that, is so primally appealing to the human mind, you know, that you can go on Spotify and get nature sound recordings of it that'll put you happily to sleep. It's a beautiful sound to the human mind. But when you know, as I did sitting there, that it's the sound of this thing in essence bleeding out, you know, that every drop of water is one less drop of ice, you know, that's poignant and confusing.
As the park geologist at Yosemite, I'm curious, what has it been like to witness the death of this glacier that's been there for centuries? And in Dan's piece, you talk about feeling helpless.
That's an accurate depiction. I'm very motivated to continue the monitoring and the documentation that has been occurring in some way or another ever since John Muir started it in 1872. And beginning in the 1930s, Park Service rangers were very diligent about getting up to the glaciers every fall and surveying the glaciers. And so I feel an obligation that I embrace to continue doing that monitoring. But that's really all I can do, right, is sort of bear witness to the disappearance of these glaciers.
Is there a call to action that emerges from going through this process? Or do you think that when we're talking about a glacier, that there's no real call to action that is going to affect the Lyell?
This is a think locally, act globally kind of situation. You know, the call to action is to please, please believe in science. You know, to please believe what the climate researchers are telling us. Please believe that if we, you know, that if we continue on our current path of carbon emissions and don't dramatically scale them back, the natural systems that we depend on and that support our civilization and that bring us a lot of happiness will continue their rapid unraveling.
Daniel, Greg, thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Daniel Duane is a writer and Greg Stock is a geologist at Yosemite National Park. Dan's new article chronicling his journey with Greg to the Lyell Glacier is in the new California Sunday Magazine. You can see pictures of Lyell at our website, thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.